You're listening to the Thank God for Nostra podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Thank God for Nostra pod. I do the Flotilla and Coracle Nostra clients, and thank you for joining, Eliza.
Thank you so much for asking me to come on. I never say yes to interviews anymore, but I genuinely wanted to have a conversation with you as a human being. So when you asked, I was like, yes, that's great. So thank you.
Well, hopefully this one will be different from all the rest since it's about Nostra and no one talks about Nostra. So
well, maybe that's why I was a little bit excited, but yeah, I know I like your, ideas. I like your takes on things. I think you're an interesting person. So yeah, of course I'd want to have a conversation.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. It's a long time coming. So,
yes.
Yeah. So to get started with, I'm sure a lot of our listeners already know who you are, but if you could give like a quick introduction to yourself and, you know, go into your story a little bit, just, you know, as deeply or shallowly as you want to do, just to kind of frame things.
Sure. I'm a pleb on Nostra. Just like everybody else, I'm a pleb on Nostra. I signed up for Nostra. Actually, it's kind of a cool story. Just cut me off if I talk too much, but it's kind of a cool story. I was having a friendly chat with Sean Lennon in DMs about just different types of tech. And I asked him if he wanted to code to Blue Sky because I was checking out Blue Sky at that time. And he said, you know, actually, I don't want to go on Blue Sky. I am really loving Nostra right now. And I didn't know what it was. I had never heard of it before. And I was like, holy Toledo, I need to figure out what it is. Because if Sean thinks it's cool, I'm like behind the eight ball. I didn't know. I thought tons of people were on Nostra, which is funny in retrospect. But I started looking to see if I could figure out what Nostra was. And I hit up Will. And I said, and I was in the DMs on Twitter at the time. And I said, and he was so kind and talked to me, Will from Domus. And he was so kind and he talked to me. And then he was like, you want to sign up for an MPub? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And I came over and I fell in love. I have been saying repeatedly recently on Nostra, I was desperately searching for a Nostra. The reason I say I was searching for a Nostra, because I had no language to put to what I was in search of. I just knew that as a human being, I deserved more. I deserved more from technology. I deserved more freedom. And we can probably get into how I came to some of those conclusions, but so on my NPub, I really just share whatever stream of consciousness. I keep it pretty light. I share my cat, Carl, a lot. He's kind of, and I know that probably sounds kind of cringe to people listening, but this is not a cringe cat situation. This is like, he's a hardworking farm cat. You're laughing because you know I'm right. Yeah. You're laughing. This is a hardworking farm cat. So I share his sort of daily life on the farm. And that's kind of fun for me. So I keep it very light. I don't share too much heavy stuff. I don't find much of a need to. Nostra has become a bit of my oasis as an individual who uses social media. Nostra is my primary social media right now. So that's it's phenomenal. I absolutely love it. As far as I'm concerned, it would take quite a long time to share a story, so I'll share a few bullet points. In 2013, I moved to a survivor safe house in Kentucky called Refuge for Women. Now it's an award-winning survivor safe house, which is pretty cool, to receive aftercare services as a survivor of sexual exploitation. In 2018, 5 years later, I became a survivor advocate in multiple states, a trained survivor advocate in multiple states. Hindsight, I probably became a survivor advocate a little too soon in my healing journey. But, you know, I was volunteering for an organization and they asked if I would want to go to school and become a survivor advocate. And I was so floored that anybody thought I'd be good at anything that I said yes. So I became a survivor advocate. It was that year that I served my first minor survivor sexually exploited through a corporate tech provider. It was Snapchat. It was a 13-year-old. And that was my introduction into the space that we're going to be talking about. And since I'm headed in this direction, and I probably should have said a few minutes ago that if you have children in the room, if you're listening to the podcast on loud, if you have, you know, young folks around, we're probably, and also if you're a survivor of some form of abuse, we're going to cover some heavy topics today. So just given that sort of preamble right up front, and that sort of serving that survivor set me on a path where I was exposed to serving and advocating for minor survivors digitally sexually exploited on corporate tech providers. I am trained to serve all types of survivors. I've served on many high-profile cases, but in 2023, I won a national award for advocating for the minor survivors of Twitter, a project that I had worked on for a few years. And I sort of won that award when it was a culmination of things, but essentially it was Elon hearing, by the grace of God, Elon heard what I had to say. And decided to implement quite a few changes when he purchased the platform. He made a private and very public commitment to myself and to survivors and parents around the globe that X would prioritize the detection and removal of child sexual abuse material, child sexual exploitation, and prioritize child safety. So a few months before Twitter had been purchased, I had a good feeling that this was what was going to happen. And I announced that after I was felt secure enough to walk away, I would be focusing on decentralization. This probably sounds odd to the folks listening, but there's definitely a reason that I got there. Sorry, that's a lot of information, but that's that. So that's the scoop in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that a lot. And
too much. Did I just overshare? I was trying to bullet point through it.
No, it's perfect. I mean, you set the stage for a lot of different things. I mean, you know, that must have been very difficult. I'm interested in a little bit more detail about like what survivor advocacy looks like, especially in like the Twitter context, kind of the legacy social media context. What's the day-to-day of that? Is it talking to people behind the screen who are providing the platform, or is it talking to regulators, or is it interacting with actual survivors, or what does that kind of look like?
I love that question. Nobody's ever asked me that question. Thank you. So it depends. It depends. So I don't think being a survivor advocate isn't something you could just necessarily freestyle. Being a trained survivor advocate, there are sort of rules you have to follow. You're trained in a state. The state has rules. It's not a lot of people, I think. Gosh, I don't want to be mean, but like there are people that sort of do it in a little bit of a vigilante type of style. I appreciate folks that want to raise awareness, but that's not really what a survivor advocate does. What a survivor advocate does is it can be any number of things. You have survivor advocates that answer the hotline numbers. You have survivor advocates that go to emergency rooms if a survivor comes in after some form of abuse. And right there, an advocate is there to do, to provide any and all services that they can provide. It can be anything from legal. It can be, introducing them to legal folks that will work for them pro bono if and when that's possible. So a survivor advocate can wear many different hats. In the case of Twitter, in the case of a 13-year-old, the first survivor that I served sexually exploited through Snapchat, this was a case that was handled by the FBI. And because the survivor was a local survivor, the individual was connected with a local organization. And then through the caregiver in that situation, they came into the organization. And it was just sort of luck of the draw how I ended up with that survivor. In the case of the survivors of Twitter, there was a lawsuit that was getting ready to be filed. And it was two minor survivors that sued Twitter. The case is a horrific case. It's an absolutely horrific case. Still to this day, it's it will never not blow my mind what a horrific case that was. I mean, just kind of the bullet points of that case. It was two minor male survivors, 13 years old. A sexual exploitation video of them ended up on Twitter. The video had over 2,000 retweets, over 160,000 views. John Doe, a minor at the time, provided Twitter with his government photo identification, proving that he was a minor at the time and proving that it was him in the video. Twitter wrote him back and refused to remove the content. It took the Department of Homeland Security stepping in for that video to be removed. We don't know how many times the video was copied. We don't know how many times that video was distributed. I think what will always forever haunt me about that case was John Doe, number one, a minor at the time, begging adults at a corporate tech provider to remove this egregious content. I would never, because the words are in the lawsuit. This is public. Anyone can look it up. I mean, this minor screaming, begging them, like, please remove it. Please remove it. On the brink of suicide. It will never, it just, it, that case will, but you know, it, you know what's terrifying about that case is it's not as rare as I think what people would think. If you look over the Pornhub lawsuits, many of these lawsuits that go to the corporate tech providers, you'll see some of the same thing over and over again. So when it came to that case, one of the reasons why I decided to serve on that case was because I was on Twitter. I was using Twitter. I love Twitter. And I saw that Twitter had absolutely no problem removing thoughts, words, ideas that were non-illegal speech. They had absolutely no problem removing journalists, news, anything, human rights activists, political dissidents from around the globe. They had absolutely no problem removing these folks. But when a minor is begging them to remove the child exploitation content, they reviewed it and refused to remove it. And frankly, it looks like X inherited that lawsuit, and it looks like the minors will lose that lawsuit. So to be clear, the law was not on the survivor side. But you know, let me be careful what I say right now. It's not that that doesn't matter. Those survivors deserve justice. But in some ways, I think that that just speaks to, okay, so the law isn't necessarily always going to protect these survivors. So when I look at a case like John Doe 1 and John Doe 2, I wonder what could have prevented all of that from happening before it happened in the first place. Why was that video even available to be put on Twitter, to where it falls on Twitter, to where there's a lawsuit? You know, so those are the...
Not to get into too much detail here, but was this video graphic, or was this kind of more in like a content gray area? And if not, like, why would Twitter refuse? What are the incentives in place? Was this a one-off reviewer failing to do their job? Or is this like a systemic thing that was going on at Twitter?
Minor males, I mean, a lot of this is in the lawsuit, so I'm not saying anything that's confidential information. I mean, it was two minor males that were completely nude, 13 years old, and I don't have kids, so I don't know quite like what folks look like, but I'm assuming that a young individual of that age looks their age. I mean, I would assume it would be a rare circumstance where it would be gray. Two minor males, fully nude in sexual ways in a video. I mean, and even if, so let's say like it was gray. Let's throw
that. Doesn't sound like it, but let's say.
Let's say like a reviewer was slammed. They were worn out. Their eyes were blurry. Who knows, right? Let's give some room for error. Once John Doe 1 provided them with government photo identification, proving that he was a minor at the time. Keep in mind, at the time, Twitter, and I don't want to hammer on Twitter for the rest of this interview because Lord knows I have for years. I don't feel a need to talk about this too much anymore. It will never not get me a little hot, you know, like mad. But, you know, let's say like that's the case. Also, what I was going to say is Twitter at the time really didn't have a reporting process that was easy for minor survivors digitally sexually exploited in this way. Now thank God. Elon, and I mean, I could sit and talk. It's not like I'm an Elon super fan. Trust me, I could sit here for 2 hours and talk trash on Elon. He does plenty I don't like. I'm just about this one specific thing. I'm grateful they made a reporting process for this stuff. That's something so small that I had been begging Twitter to do for years, an easy reporting system. You know, and when we talk about the difference between Twitter, X, and Noster, you know, the difference is the corporate tech providers actually have an opportunity to detect and remove this stuff. And when they do it and they do it right, they can send that off to law enforcement. The appropriate law enforcement globally gets notified. And then we can make moves and start to catch some of these predators and hopefully, in the best case scenarios, set some victims and survivors free. That should be the goal, right? Like, why would Twitter... What would the incentive be for them not prioritizing it? You'd have to ask.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is engagement. You're saying this has lots of retweets, so they're probably making ad revenue off of this content. It's psychotic to me to think that that's something that they would want to do when, you know, they're deplatforming Donald Trump because he's too offensive. It's the two things, you're comparing apples and oranges.
I have a few things to pick apart. The minor victims and survivors never had a voice. Most of the survivors digitally sexually exploited. When I say I advocated for the minor survivors of Twitter, I mean for the hundreds and thousands of children that I don't know, will never know their name, and who don't even know that they were sexually, like in other countries, because there were huge rings that were busted that were running through Twitter. And by the way, I hate to just constantly slam on Twitter. This wasn't just a Twitter problem.
It's just where you were.
Those were the minors that I was serving. You know, there were massive, massive amounts of money to be made. And Twitter, I hate to be tinfoil hat about it. If I had to guess, I would say that they were making quite a bit of money off pornography and porn bots, and that sifting through was too much time and too much energy and too much money. They didn't want to, and they figured they could fight the lawsuits if and when they came from survivors, which is what happened. And they could probably win because they have a pretty hardy Section 230 protection. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have Section 230 protection. I'm just saying that if I was Twitter, I would assume that the engagement from pornography and the advertising dollars that they would get would have been more beneficial.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, talking about the cost of doing all this moderation versus hiring a couple of lawyers. At scale, and this is another thing about scale, you know, like at scale, legal solutions become a lot easier and, you know, go along with a competitive moat too. Whereas smaller service providers, they would rather moderate any day because large scale legal stuff is just such a pain.
That's interesting that you say that. But I also too, I watched just a few of the episodes of the CNN Twitter doc. Now I'm willing to leave a little room for like, maybe there was some propaganda happening. I don't know. Like, I don't know how real the CNN Twitter doc, but Rabo was made an accessible link on Noster. And so I could watch it. And it appears to me that child safety was an issue that was brought up early on, and that Twitter was kind of a mess, and that they were having just difficulty keeping the site up to even stop and think about child safety issues. And, you know, I've had to learn to show them a lot of grace. And just say, you know what, I don't know if I'd been in a position, because they were a part of a new frontier. I don't know if I would have been in the same position if I would have handled it any better than they did. And so the only thing I can do, looking back on that Twitter thing, is just learn from it and see where we can improve moving forward.
Yeah. Well,
as a society.
I mean, now's our chance. You know, Noster is a new thing. We're constantly trying to fix what's broken or create new interesting things. And The difficult, unpalatable work often goes undone or unnoticed. So, that's the conversation we're trying to start and continue here. But before we get into the Nostr side of things, I was wondering if you could, you know, developers, most people don't think about this stuff. And so we don't have categories for what the different categories of abuse look like, what sort of action items there might be for protecting people, both victims and people who might be exposed to the content, because that can be traumatic as well. Could you go through the different categories of abuse that you can think of? Like, you know, just off the top of my head, there's images that are published, they're broadcast, right? They're on the internet or on social media. And that's one form where your likeness is in a compromising position, is being published all over the place and is hard to take back down. And there's technological tools out there that use hash tables, but many of them are proprietary. This content is also toxic in terms of, you know, if you're found with this content on your computer, then you can go to jail for a long time. You can have your rights taken away. But then there's like the flip side of like the encrypted chat, where people are actually engaging with minors or with vulnerable people in encrypted digital spaces. And, you know, that's whereas the former is broadcast, the latter is it's a private situation. That seems much, much harder to solve, even though the first one's also really hard to solve. And, you know, the only way to get at that is to do things like what the UK is doing with their, you know, all their backdoored encryption and the laws that they're imposing on software providers. So those are the two categories in my head, but maybe you can fill that out a little bit for me.
Okay, so these you asked to name the forms of abuse. There's all forms of image-based sex abuse. So that could be anything from revenge porn to online child exploitation to, of course, now we have artificial intelligence, deepfakes, things of this nature. So they can use your child's imagery. Even if you post a picture of your child that seems normal, like if you're at an Easter Day picnic or something and everyone's wearing clothes and it's a non-sexual picture, that the picture of that. And I'm not trying to be like I'm not trying to be a scare tactic person. I mean, it's just, or whatever. You know, I'm not trying to bring over. It's just the fact of the matter. It's just the facts. It's just where we're at in our technological. And it's frankly speaking, I don't even think we have time to sit and talk about, not you, but I mean, just as a society, like, oh, what's a scare tactic? What's not? It's like, no, this is a real thing. We kind of just got to find solutions. Like, there's all forms, stalking, harassment. You know, there's things that would fall under probably what the folks at Nostr would consider free speech, but there's a harassment beyond beyond just free speech issues where it becomes really illegal and just not cool for the ecosystem. But there are many, many forms. There are you could sell human beings, you could sell body parts on so the trafficking, when you're talking about trafficking or online exploitation, there are many, many forms it can take. Grooming, enticement, child enticement, which I think you're talking about a little bit more. Now, when it comes to encryption, this has been probably the spot where I've become the biggest black sheep. in the child protection space and the online safety space and the anti-human trafficking space, I'm unwavering about digital privacy rights and strong encryption. My thought process, this is the complete opposite of all governments and any organization that serves survivors. My thought process from that, I think I've reached a logical conclusion, most logical conclusion. And I think the folks on Nostr would probably tend to agree. I take a human rights approach with encryption and digital privacy rights. And I say, without digital privacy rights and strong encryption, no survivor's safe. Like from anyone, the government or anyone, like survivors deserve strong encryption as well. And I think, you know, political dissidents, journalists, whistleblowers, activists, just anyone, if you want to talk to your friend about the type of t-shirt you have on, you deserve an opportunity to have digital privacy and strong encryption. Now, how And, you know, what baffles my mind, sorry, I got to go on a tangent for 1 second. What baffles my mind about saying these things is that this is the black sheep approach, my approach with the encryption and digital privacy rights. But frankly speaking, I think we now as a society have seen enough of these high profile cases with these high profile abusers that go all the way to the top of entertainment, all the way to the top of God only knows what governments, intelligence agencies, what on earth would make someone think that there are not survivors that deserve strong encryption and digital privacy rights. It blows my mind. And just because survivors in the United States might have more of an opportunity to speak freely doesn't mean that survivors around the globe are free enough to speak freely. So I'm not budging on this one. But as far as the encryption, you know, the UK is taking a very strong approach. We'll see how it pans out. I have not seen a government yet be able to make much of a dent. They really just waste everybody's time as the problem continues to get worse. They waste everyone's time and money, and the problem just continues to get worse and worse. So that's why when I was advocating for the minor survivors of Twitter, I didn't go through an organization and I didn't go through a government and I didn't go looking for the government to change laws. I didn't have that kind of time. I said, I'll do it myself. And that's just kind of my thing with a lot of things. If I can do it myself legally, I will. Mm-hmm. No, why wait for the government to like set a meeting in like 6 months where they have a committee meeting? It's tragic and it's pathetic. And frankly, I mean, if the governments would have had solutions that were going to be work, they've had decades. I mean, the internet's existed for decades and they've literally done literally nothing. And frankly, I would say I could debate that they have actually made it worse.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the modus operandi for governments is to virtue signal based on public opinion and then set up solutions that erode fundamental freedoms. Without which we can't actually fight these problems. So, like, you know, for example, with hash tables, there are services. Microsoft provides one of them. Cloudflare has one where you can send an image to the service and say, "Is this illegal or not?" And they will say yes or no, and without leaking the algorithm that they use to do the blur hashing for the content. And that's a neat solution. But the problem is it's all completely closed and all the content is toxic. And so and then, of course, NCMEC is completely overwhelmed with reports. Very few of them ever reach law enforcement and then they get closed. People don't get listened to. And meanwhile, all of this stuff is out there on the internet anyway, in places that are not scanning for it. And so, you know, it's trivially easy for criminals to route around the controls that are out there. Meanwhile, technologists who might have an interest in solving these things, their hands are tied because they can't train a model on this stuff. They can't come up with hash tables that are publicly accessible. In order to use Microsoft hash table product, you have to apply and get permission. And there are not a lot of those licenses that are given out. But I want to hear from in your words.
I think you just tapped into something so important. I think you just tapped into something so completely important. I wish that my experience is that a lot of folks in tech do care about this and they do want to work on this. Their hands are literally tied. And I think it's been a situation, and perhaps if we had an honest conversation with the folks at old Twitter, maybe they would say something along those lines. We don't know. I don't know. So I don't think it's as easy, you know, even in having some of these conversations as it pertains to Noster, you know, to even get the hashes, you got to pay an exorbitant amount to be a part of an organization. And for smaller tech, you know, entities, I don't want to just say platforms because it could be any type of tech, you know, of course Amazon can pay to be a part of your group. Of course X can pay to be a part of your group. Of course Meta is a part of your group. But if it's a smaller, I mean, of course Blue Sky paid once they were bigger, you know, but it's like for a smaller tech group, that's why you see some of the forums, like the hamster forum and this biking forum, shut down in the UK because a lot of the, they were like, we're too small to moderate and to abide by these laws. And the fines are so large if we get caught with anything. I mean, they're like, we can't have a hamster forum that talks about hamsters. And the bikers are the, like, they're cyclists. They have, like, it's just standard stuff. It's like regular stuff. It's like, oh, we have a cycling meetup. They're like, we can't take on these fines. So we're going to have to shut down. Not that they have CSAM on their bike forum, but they're like, on the off chance, we're not trying to, we can't afford to pay $2 billion. But then what happens is, then you're in a situation where only the corporate tech providers like Meta can pay the fines. And then you have a situation where everyone has to be on Meta, and then that opens, or X, and then that opens up another issue, which is then if the government in the UK wants to quell some protest or some political dissident or some free speech, they have that access to go over to X and say, hey, this is a government takedown request. And then X has to fight them again.
Yeah.
It's a mess. It really is a mess. It really is a mess. And that's why, one of the reasons why I published that piece on Noster, because I'm kind of sick of the mess. I don't like the mess. I've looked at it long enough, and it's almost like there's obviously needs to be another solution that needs to be found. I'm not saying that my piece is so revolutionary. It's really not. But it was like, no, there has to be other conversations about solutions and ideas thrown out there from smart guys like yourself, people that care, parents, especially those of us that want to see more freedom as the internet moves forward, just for everyone. But some of these darker areas, these darker spots that we will be confronted with, it's better we just talk about it now.
Yeah, there's been some conversation in the Fediverse on ActivityPub and a little bit within Noster about addressing some of these things using and like basically getting decentralized access to these hash tables or some kind of mechanism for recognizing the content. And, you know, of course, that only addresses a very small part of this whole topic, but it's a good start. And, you know, because the content is toxic, you cannot do it in a decentralized way. And that's one of the, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about Noster is anyone can just spin up a client and access the network and present it in a unique way. But that person does not have access to the tools that are necessary to do their job in helping to keep bad content off of their software or off of the network as a whole. But I want to touch on something that you mentioned earlier, which is that victims, they deserve access to encryption as well. Could you go into that a little bit more? Like, what is it that is valuable about encryption in particular? I mean, obviously for everyone, but because governments are always spying on us, corporations are always spying on us, but in particular for survivors of abuse.
Yeah, sure. I mean, as a survivor advocate, I almost exclusively use encrypted messaging. I don't know who these abusers are. They could be part of a gang. If you think that these gangs are not high tech, you got another thing coming. They are high tech. You know, the gangs, the intelligence agencies, it could just be an abuser that's really technologically savvy. I mean, I'm not saying that abuse moved off the street. I'm saying that that online, because it definitely still happens on the street and happens in many forms, but there are a lot of abusers that are very technologically savvy. And it's not something that I'm necessarily that good at as a human being. I'm not technologically savvy. So I try to rely on some of the, you know, Simplex, some of the more privacy focused and encrypted. You know, there is a lot of information. Well, it's difficult for survivors to receive any form of justice. It's not as difficult for survivors to receive support, but as an advocate, I have to protect myself and I also want to protect the survivor. So I feel like that should be pretty obvious, but because I serve sometimes, not all the time, but because I've been known to serve on some rather very high profile cases that involve people with access to people with power. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I served multiple survivors of Epstein Maxwell. So, I mean, I think that speaks for itself. Heck yeah, I use different types of messaging apps. We use all different types of tactics because we don't know. You know, I don't necessarily think that. I don't know. I don't want to get too tinfoil hat, but it's. I listened and heard what Snowden said. I listened and heard what Assange said. I listened and heard what the Cypherpunk said. I listened and heard, and I watched, and I said, okay, in some of these cases, they were dealing with, activists from, the Arab Spring and other, other situations like that. So I'm like, okay, how can that be used to, those tactics be used to serve survivors? Now, technology's changed quite a bit, and our access to what we have available has changed quite a bit. But this is the type of stuff that listening to what they said has taught me kind of a lot. Sorry, that was like a bunch of word salad. I serve survivors that need encryption. They deserve encryption. That's what I believe.
Well, it seems like in a lot of ways, basically a Second Amendment issue, as important as cryptography is for free speech as I can't remember what it's called, but the lawsuit in the 90s proved the same logic that is applied to munitions should be applied in this case as well. Not to ban it, but because if you make something illegal, the only people who are going to have it are the people who are either above the law or sidestepping the law. So by banning certain types of guns, now only criminals or the military can get away with those. By banning encryption, only criminals or people above the law, like Epstein, Maxwell, people high up in Hollywood, they can hide their criminal activity from the government or in collusion with the government, however those things work. Not to be too tinfoil hatty, but there is obviously stuff like that going on that is a matter of record. And so just saying, we're going to disarm ourselves so that you guys can collude more effectively it's not a winning solution at all.
No, I don't think so. And I mentioned it in the piece that I posted on Nostr. I mean, a lot of this has been tried in other countries like China, and it didn't stop these crimes from happening. So if it's already been tried and didn't work, I think we have enough evidence to say, okay, let's try a different approach. I am well aware that by allowing end-to-end encryption, you are going to have abusers and illegal content. I'm well aware of this. I'm also aware that survivors will also have an opportunity to speak to their advocates, loved ones, and maybe reach out for help and support in a way where they feel empowered and safe. That's one reason why I love Nostr too. It in the case of survivors, it has an opportunity to empower survivors by giving them their own voice. X won't own their voice. Meta won't own their voice. They will own their voice. I feel like that's so empowering. Yes, it comes with some problems. Like you have trolls in the comments and people talking crazy and wild and you have to mute them. I get it. Trust me. But it's empowering for me as an individual, as a woman, as a survivor, to be able to say, no, I own this. This is all me, baby. These are my words. And if I wanted to take it a step further, I could make my own client. I could have my own relays. I could really, truly, truly own my own voice for real, not even have to rely on anybody else. This is so empowering to me as an individual. That's one reason why I absolutely love Nostr. But the deal with first and foremost, I don't want to hear any government ever talk about encryption. They cannot solve it without cracking encryption. If they clean up every piece of CSAM off the internet, and I'm saying this with my whole chest because I mean it, because I had to say this type of stuff in meetings and I'm the ultimate black sheep and I don't care. I'm not backing down. If they can clean it up all the way on the internet, there's not a piece of CSAM on the internet. No child is being exploited. No child is being groomed. They fully clean the internet. Let's say with the use of artificial intelligence, let's say like something's designed. then maybe then I might hear a peep about why they need to get encryption, you know, remove encryption to take it a step further. Until that day, I don't want to hear a single peep from any government, because I know if they can't clean it up when it's on the main feed, then what on earth would make me think that they would clean it up on if they were able to remove encryption? The other thing is they do not give law enforcement resources to deal with this. They do not give law enforcement the training, the resources, especially not around the globe. They can get the United States ready, which they haven't, but law enforcement in the United States can get fully geared up to deal with this with every technological change. But what about the Philippines? And you guys want to break encryption? Get law enforcement. And I'm not a big stumper on law enforcement. I'm not like pro law enforcement. I just live in reality right now. So that's the reality, is they want to take away everyone's rights. And I don't think that I haven't noticed that governments also take it to the full extreme. We have to break encryption. We have to digital ID everyone. But yet they can't remove what's out there now without breaking the encryption or doing digital. You know, so I hate seeing digital ID. I feel like that's kind of tinfoil hat too. But you get what I'm saying. It's like, it just, all this stuff really yanks my chain, but I should say something positive. And the something positive I have to say is Noster gives me a ton of hope. It doesn't give me hope with CSAM. It does not give me hope with CSAM as far as detection and removal. I think a lot of that will come from relays. I think folks will have to monitor the content that's going on in their relays. I don't think that people will be able to have too many people in their relays. I think the relays will have to be smaller. By the way, I'm a complete idiot when it comes to this stuff. So if anybody has any suggestions, please say something, because I'm just freestyling. But I think that folks will have to monitor what's in their relays, and folks are going to have to go from there. I have some sort of out-the-box ideas for Noster, sort of a little different, and I could speak on that. But when it comes to survivors being able to share their experience, strength, and hope in a censorship-resistant way, I have found nothing better than Noster. And it brings a tear to, it literally like chokes me up when I think about the fact that I know some survivors will need to be able to speak freely. And not have anyone be able to remove their story or their words or their experience. And, you know, I don't have a problem with Elon. I don't have a problem with Linda. But if you trust, as a survivor, if you trust someone with your story, they can remove it over there. They can. And I mean, I'm not trying to talk ill on Elon, but I mean, it's pretty open. He has a clear relationship. He's a special government employee. I'm not saying they would remove a survivor's story if a survivor spoke out against someone in a position of power right now, but I can't guarantee it, and I'm not willing to leave it up to chance. Survivors are too important to me.
Yeah, it seems like there's a really clear choice here in this area especially, and that is to either empower people to be responsible for themselves and to have the tools that they need to protect themselves and to be to speak, to be authentic. Or to disempower people and hand all the power to the state. And the thing about that is, if you hand all the power to the state and take it out of the hands of people, if you ear tag everyone and monitor everyone all the time, then what you get is what you are creating. You get cattle, and cattle are not responsible for themselves. Cattle do not exercise agency. They don't have dignity. And so if you want people who have all those things, you also need free people. So that's the way I see the choice, and hopefully us free people can do the right thing and be responsible. But that is also a big if.
I mean, even in China, where they've tried it, it didn't. I mean, I'm not saying that the people in China are cattle, but I'm saying they've tried the extreme and it didn't work. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, and I do believe that we need as much freedom as possible to at least have these conversations. We can't leave these issues up to the governments, because they mess up everything.
Yep. Yeah. And so let's get into some ideas for solutions on Noster in particular, but also in general. You know, like, so starting with law enforcement, you know, what could be done to make law enforcement more effective in sort of, you know, a statist, but a limited government sort of way, where you've got law enforcement going after the bad guys and not the good guys. Do you have any ideas on that? Like, is it a matter of funding? Is it a matter of training? Is it a matter of focus? Is it a matter of tools? You know, like, so the governments are always wanting to create these like surveillance dystopias from the top down. But, you know, a lot of police officers are just not technically literate. So like, is that a good place to start? Like, this is how to do a trace route to find the location of the server that's hosting this content. And then you can go talk to the administrator. Or is that like, do you think that would have any impact at all?
So are you saying from a Nostr, and I'm apologizing. So are you saying law enforcement from a Nostr standpoint, or law enforcement just on
just in general to start? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, law enforcement, this is not their area of expertise. As we all know, technology is rapidly changing. It would be difficult to keep up, right? Their hands are tied with funding. And unfortunately, because minor survivors specifically, tend to have no voice, it's embarrassing for them to step forward. A lot of times they don't know the rights of their children. So it sort of gets shoved back into the corner. And, you know, they take officers off of working, you know, FBI cases to go, you know, hunt down January 6th, you know, depending on how you look at it, protesters, rioters, I don't know. It depends on what people's interpretation of that day was. But I mean, they'll take officers off one thing and go to another thing. The other truth is that this is not an easy thing for these law enforcement officers. I can't believe I'm saying something super nice about law enforcement, but it's the truth. For them to have to look at this content, to hear this stuff, to see this stuff, to speak to survivors in a trauma-informed way, it's very difficult stuff. And then, you know, the same person could be sent, you know, 5 minutes later down to do traffic stops. You don't know. So I don't think that there's enough resources for these, for law enforcement when dealing with these issues. I don't think that they're trained enough. Where I would start, the movement has tried a few times to some different ways to try to educate and raise awareness to officers simply on just how to be trauma-informed when a survivor discloses abuse. Slowly but surely, law enforcement is getting better at that. A lot of survivors, including myself, I'm not a survivor of child sexual abuse material, but a lot of survivors, including myself, went to law enforcement to make reports, and it was a horrible experience. We would never have proceeded that's sort of the main feedback you get from survivors of all types, of all forms of abuse. You know, I don't really know necessarily what the answer is, but when it comes to technology, United States can do okay. You know, the EU and the UK can do okay. They're still behind abusers. Abusers adapt to each new technological wave like it's no problem. I mean, trust me, if these abusers were making clients over on Nostr, we would be, you know what I mean? Like, they are with the times. So how could law enforcement, with very little funding or resources off a disgusting topic, really be putting enough into it? I'm not a law enforcement expert, so I don't know. But I would say probably priority number one would be just getting each officer trauma-informed. So if and when a survivor discloses abuse, and also establishing an open and honest dialogue with the community and in the schools about creating, the word safe space sort of gets a cringe connotation to it, but just sort of legitimately creating a safe space so that if you are at being abused, or if you have questions, or if you're at risk for being abused, you can disclose to a safe person, whether that be a teacher, you know, a coach, an officer. You know, I mean, there's other issues too. Like, there are quite a few officers that get arrested for this stuff as well.
Yeah. The enforcement industry often attracts the people who you're trying to enforce against. So there's that incentive there as well. Yeah, it's disgusting. But yeah, well said. I mean, my takeaway is basically it's incredibly hard in all these different dimensions. There's no one coming to save you. You have to be not as an individual person, but as technologists, we're on our own, and we have to find a creative way to solve these things and to govern, you know, to put our own house in order, basically. That's kind of what this is. And, you know, what you're saying about safe spaces, about people that you can go to, who you can trust. You know, a lot of the time, the difficult thing is that most abusers, correct me if I'm wrong, are those people. They're in those roles. They're parents or family members or teachers. But there is safety in numbers, right? So hopefully, if you have multiple trustworthy people in your life that you can go to, there you'll hit on one of them. Is that accurate to say? Or,
well, I mean, there's so many different forms of abuse. There is a lot of familial abuse. There's a lot of abuse within family members, step parents. So unfortunately, that's not always the safest environment. Sometimes teachers are abusers, sometimes coaches, a lot of times coaches, face leaders, even, unfortunately, you know, a lot of face leaders. So I don't necessarily know exactly what the answer is there, other than, and you know, what really stinks sometimes is that the abusers will isolate the victim away. So, you know, I love homeschooling. I was homeschooled, for the most part. I was almost completely homeschooled. But that's great. I love homeschooling. I love unschooling. But in that case, you're isolating your victims away from, you know what I'm saying? The community might not even know you have. So we get into these really, really sticky places as a society. I think some of the best solutions that I've thought of are really just getting back to community. Knowing your neighbors, talking to your neighbors, being a part of a community. Like, I know this sounds like so mind-blowing because we're all terminally online, but like going to do local things and then you talk to your neighbors and if you see something's off, you're like, oh, maybe there's something off. And then you have an honest conversation. I know it sounds so foreign to like be nice to your neighbors or like talk to your neighbors or maybe go to like the local farmer's market. This is like it's a bunch of terminally online people. But I think community is can really help. Unfortunately, community can also be weaponized. There is a lot of sex abuse that can happen in certain communities, religious communities, sex groups, cults, all types of things. But I think just having your eyes open and looking up and looking at the humans around you, your fellow humans around you, it's amazing to me how many in-depth conversations I have, especially, you know, in airports or other places that I'm at. Even if I'm just out doing anything random, if I just look up and just smile and say hi, like you would be surprised. A lot of people are so lonely and just want to talk. It doesn't mean you have to be best friends. And Carl's walking down the road now. I have no idea where he's going. But my cat is taking off for another farm. So we'll see where he heads. So I think, you know, sometimes just looking up and smiling at people and having an open vibe. And that way, if someone... I mean, this sounds so woo-woo-woo and so crazy, but it's so simple. Just like saying hi and smiling to people. And then, God forbid, if they are in a situation where they need help, or if you're at a gas station putting gas in your car and you see somebody reach over and do something that's violent or weird, you got to know what to do. You got to be able to call law enforcement. You got to be able to go inside and ask for help. You know, without putting yourself in danger. If you're in the ladies' room and somebody asks you for help, what would you do? Who would you call? You know, do you have the hotline numbers to call if the survivor doesn't want to reach out to law enforcement? Those are some of the things that I think are the most impactful. knowing some of your local organizations, if a friend discloses to you that they're in a domestic violence situation, do you know how to get a hold of your local domestic violence shelter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's amazing how the solutions to all these big global problems, how often it just boils down to localism and community, getting to know people in real life, being active, having your eyes up. And that's encouraging to me. In a sense, it means that some people are going to be isolated, but that is just kind of how the world works. But for the rest of us, that offers a lot of hope. And, you know, this is something that Nostr potentially has to offer too. You're talking about how relays, people are going to have to moderate their own relays. And that's a sort of digital localism, right? Instead of having one giant database that the entire platform runs on, Nostr has all these different relays that are run by different people. And there's kind of two main ways to moderate relays. One is by looking at all the content on it, checking out every link to see if it's kosher or not, and then banning things one off. And that's extremely laborious. And like you're saying, you know, can be very, very hard for a person to do. It takes a lot of emotional capacity in order to deal with this kind of content. And I would never go into it. I don't envy anyone who has that job. I don't know how anyone takes those jobs, because there's no amount of money you could pay me to have to like sift through that stuff. Luckily, you know, AI seems to be potentially helpful in this area to just flag things that are categorically off, whether or not they're technically illegal. You can kind of have a narrower scope for what you want to keep or not keep. So that's an option. But a way more powerful way to manage access to relays and content is just through Web of Trust. So if you follow some people, you've explicitly said, I would like to see what these people have to say. And, you know, usually we look at this from a client perspective, where you're using a particular client and the client only pulls stuff from your follows list and maybe your network. So people who you follow also follow. And that makes it a pretty nice, safe experience for the user, where they don't have to see anything. Now, of course, under the hood, all that objectionable content is circulating all over the place. And that is that's an improvement. You know, people don't have to see it if they don't want to, but it still means that it's accessible. And that's an existential risk for the protocol as a whole, and then obviously for the people who are victims of that abuse. But then for relay operators, there's an increasing use of Web of Trust-based relays, thanks to UTXO and Bitvora. They've been building different relay configurations that you just say, here's my pub key, only allow notes from my network. And then, you know, you can also have more granular blocker allow lists within that configuration. And that's a huge thing, because, you know, that means that service providers who are hosting content can be confident about the content that they're hosting based on who they trust, rather than just analyzing all the content all the time. And yes, there will be an underground of relays that host objectionable content. And if someone switches to the global tab in their feed, they might see that stuff. This is yet another reason against global. You know, global doesn't technically exist on Nostr, because no one has a full list of all the relays that are out there. But even so, people like to look at a totally unfiltered feed. And that's dangerous. I don't know why people do that.
I try so hard. Even if my finger accidentally slips, or like I go to do a thing, I'm like, no global for me. Because I'm, you know, I mean, yeah, it's no, that's going to be a hard no for me. I thought when I saw plenty and I was like, no, I'm good on that.
It's all Chinese spam anyway. Like there's no reason to go there. So I think on Nostr, we should be leaning into the localism. We should be like, okay, well, here's a hub that has, you know, kind of, it's a bootstrap place to get onto Nostr, and it's well trusted, you know, the Donis relay or something. I don't know what kind of content moderation they do. I know that Nostr.build does a lot of content moderation, which is great, but you know, any client can load an image from any domain. So Nostr is only as moderated in terms of image storage as the internet as a whole. And the internet as a whole is not moderated at all. You know, like domain registrars don't often take domains down that are hosting illegal content. And then, of course, you've got things like BitTorrent and Tor. So like this stuff is just going to be out there, and it's going to be accessible to the people who want to find it. So I think like the job is to protect users, regular users who are either potential victims or potential consumers of this stuff. And like that has a way of preventing further abuse, right? Because if people aren't introduced to this content, you know, say there's a teenager who goes to global and they see something they shouldn't have, like that can bring people down a bad path. So having a dark web and a light web, that's actually like not the worst way to handle stuff like this.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. I was speaking. I was made aware of a situation that happened recently, and I'm not going to be too, I'm going to be very careful. Someone posting blatant CSAM. When I say that, I mean blatant child sexual abuse material was hijacking a frequently used hashtag by Nostriches. When I say Nostriches, if anybody's listening to this that isn't on Nostr, it means just like regular plebs like myself, like Nostr users. That's problematic. That's a standard tactic that's used on corporate tech social media providers. They usually come up with the hashtags in Telegram chats. I don't think coming over to Nostr, it would be that difficult to figure out which hashtags folks are using. I'm not going to say which hashtag it was I'm not going to draw attention to it, but just know that's a thing.
Yep.
You know,
hashtags are just another version of global. They're filtered to a topic, but they're not filtered by Web of Trust or by content necessarily. So yeah, I think topics, hashtags, feeds should be limited to, you know, trusted relays or trusted network. There should never be a global hashtag feed because that's very easy to hijack. Yeah.
What I think would be helpful, I'm going to get so fish filleted on Nostr for this, but I think what would be helpful is if individuals were interested in moderating their relays, if there was an open and honest conversation with law enforcement, with some of the national organizations, like what would you like us to do? I've been recommending an open and honest conversation with the organizations. By the way, I'm not speaking on behalf of an organization. I actually don't really like the organizations, if I'm being honest, but that's what we have. And I like to work within reality, the framework of what we have from reality. But I think it would be a good idea to establish a relationship with those organizations, because what you don't want to do is become the poster child because when the hit pieces come out of the corporate press and when the governments are doing their congressional hearings and when they're doing all these things, you're not going to sit there and have the general public sit there and be like, Nostr is a separate, there's different, it'll just be anything on Nostr is bad. Yeah. And it's for child abusers. It'll become in the eyes of the public, it'll be the pedo protocol. That's it. You don't want to be the pedo protocol. So I think an open and honest conversation with some of these entities, because we work within the framework of reality, right? I'm not advocating for which organizations. I'm just saying, I don't think that would be a bad approach for individuals who want to have relays that are, you know, good. I will give a compliment to Blue Sky, and I know I'm veering off a little bit, but I can't believe I'm going to give a compliment to Blue Sky. But Blue Sky did something that I wish a lot of these tech providers had done. And I've learned from what they did, and I like it. I like what they did. They came out and they said, hey, we're completely underwater with CSAM. We cannot possibly on our own deal with this. We are doing everything we can do. We are fully underwater. And they said it a few times. They came out and said, oh, we are losing. We are losing the battle. Like, I don't remember the exact words, but it was desperate. It was desperate. If and when there's ever a moment where Nostr has just tons of people, let's say like X gets shut down in 3 countries at once, and tons of people come over to Nostr, and all of a sudden it's a problem for real. Be honest. Just be honest. Like, you will look better. I think Blue Sky looks better because they were honest. instead of fighting it tooth and nail and waiting for the first rounds of lawsuits to come down, because they will. You know, they will. Now, I know everybody's sitting there like, oh, no, sir, we're untouchable. We're untouchable. There's more than one way to, there's more than, you know, in the court of public opinion, you might be untouchable in some ways. But in the court of public opinion, you know, I don't know, you know, what, you know, I would like one day to be able to have a church relay. I would like one day to be able to have a survivor's relay. I would like for one day, you know, for myself, like a community where it's like, I don't want to be hanging out on the pedo protocol. You know what I mean? I'm not going to ask a group of survivors to make a client and some relays with, you know what I mean? That's very closed off and close knit on the, they're going to be like, why would we come over there? You know? So I'm just saying, if and when the day ever comes, be honest, just be honest.
I think I totally agree. I mean,
pretty well for Blue Sky.
Mastodon had a episode like this a couple of years ago. There was a report that came out of Stanford, I think, that analyzed just how much CSAM was on Mastodon. And there was a fair amount, you know, it was mostly a couple of bad actors who were publishing it and who were not policing their instances, but, you know, it's federated, so it spreads to the rest of the ecosystem. And in response, the Fediverse put together IFTTOS, which is, can't remember what it stands for, but it's a federated trust and safety organization. I've been kind of tracking their work for a couple of years now. I haven't been really actively involved, but they're doing exactly what you're saying. They're having an open conversation. They're building tools in a federated way to sort of try to address this problem. So I think that's exactly right. We should be honest and we should be, you know, and I think it's important to, like, yeah, we don't want Nostr to become this PR disaster for sure. But what we should be doing is not worrying about what other people think, but just doing our best to get ahead of the problem, rather than being reactionary. There has not been a ton of work on that front, but our ideas are being developed about how to use relays better. And I've always advocated for this as far as, like, decommodification of relays is what I've always called it. Just relays should be special and you should only connect to them if it actually makes sense to do that. So you should have a relationship with these service providers of some kind, even if it's just kind of like cursory. So yeah, definitely.
I love that. And I, you know, it's interesting in my quest for, I was thinking about this today when I was listening to your interview with Alex Gleason. I never tried Mastodon. I went, like, literally everywhere. I tried all the things and I never tried Mastodon, and I don't know why. And I'm wondering if that's why, if that series of, you know, the Stanford, a lot of people, you know, the Stanford stuff, it was debatable in some ways, but I actually really liked the research that they did on these topics. I thought that they had an interesting approach, and they definitely did that one. But I was going to say, I like to dream real big, and I like to kind of ask for things that are really big. And if I just could ask the Nostr community for anything super outside the box, it's going to sound crazy, but maybe in a few years you'll understand why I said this. If I had my way, keep in mind, I'm taking myself out of the equation. I wouldn't need to be there. I don't need to be a part of it. I don't need to have anything to do with it. I would say, do something like Nostrville. Do 2 days, this topic specifically: child sexual abuse material, child sexual exploitation content, and image-based sex abuse. Have it be 2 days of devs, either, you know, live there in person at Bitcoin Park. And I would say, start off this summit by listening to the voices of survivors, just a few, tell their experience, strength, and hope, so that it humanizes the thing, you know, it humanizes the crimes. I'm an ANCAP. Like, there's a lot of ANCAPs out there. We, you know, we're super against even hearing about the four horsemen. You know, it's like so cringe. But when you see the survivors, when you hear their experience, when you listen to them tell, especially, I think that if there are some organizations that specifically connect you with survivors that were sexually exploited on corporate tech providers, to just hear what that experience was like, because it's horrible. You know, it's simply horrible. Listen to the voices of survivors, a couple of survivors, and then sit there with the devs, which I know a lot of you folks are parents. and have a lot of these conversations. What would some of these solutions look like? If I could have my big ask from Noster, that would be it. I know this probably sounds crazy, but I think that would show a level of, we're not afraid of these abusers. We're not afraid of these abusers coming over to the protocol and taking over. We are going to be proactive as a bunch of leaders. Like, we really want this to work, so no one's going to come around and mess this up. That's what I feel like. I feel like that would be the coldest play. Like, no, actually, we're going to get ahead of you and we're going to sit around and we might fight. You guys might fight, men and women, because I know this female does, but folks might fight at this summit, not in front of the survivors, hopefully they'll, you know, but you folks might fight, but you're fighting for what you believe in, which is we all want to protect this beautiful protocol. I think that's what it would be. So if I had to ask my, if I had to throw my Hail Mary pass, that would be it.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. We need to approach this problem and really all the problems like adults, you know. Noster has for a long time been a hobby for a lot of people and kind of is approached, the whole ecosystem is approached like a hobby. It's like, it's really fun. It's really interesting and you can get nerd sniped. But we have to take responsibility for ourselves and do the stuff that isn't very fun or very interesting. And also to like, you know, to contextualize something I said earlier, I'm sure I've said this enough times already, but you know, I said like, it's okay if there's a dark web, you know, and it's like, all we're talking about are computers. There are computers and there are other people's computers. And, you know, if we want to deprive people of the ability to have a dark web, well, that means depriving them not only of encryption, but also of computers. Okay. So like, and not only computers, but like a lot of this stuff can be transmitted even outside of the digital realm. And a lot of this stuff happens outside of the digital realm. You know, something that I always come back to when I get discouraged about Noster, about this topic, about how out of control the internet is just looking at how God made the world, right? He made the world and he gave us free will. And he said, I love you. I want you to reciprocate my love. So have at it. And we said, no, that's okay. We went our own way, but God allowed us to do that. He didn't destroy the world in that moment. He actually sent his son to come and enter into our brokenness and our failure, our rebellion, and heal us by loving us more, but not by depriving us of our free will and turning us into cows. He gave us more freedom, more peace, more joy, and that's how he's reconciling all things to himself. And I think that's the same approach that we need to take is, you know, whether as Christians, as members of the body of Christ doing his work in the world, or as non-Christians who want to see these things improve, like the answer is love, freedom, responsibility. So that's like it's a ground truth that I come back to all the time, which is God made us free. That's how the world works. We can't fix freedom.
I think, I'm very excited about the freedom capabilities on Noster. I'm very transparent about the fact that I want survivors to have an opportunity to speak freely if and when they so choose in a censorship-resistant way. I am the underpinning of all of it for me personally is, of course, I want freedom of speech because I want freedom of religion. I want to protect all religions. I think that that's so crucial. You know, we live in an interesting time right now where individuals, corporate tech providers have really hijacked the brand, made freedom tech almost like their brand. They hijacked it. They hijacked it because it was cool. They hijacked it because it resonates, because I think people really do want that. They just don't know. And, you know, since that it exists and they don't know what the problem is, they didn't go and look into the soul of Twitter and go, holy Toledo, the whole thing's broken. It wasn't just the child sexual exploitation content that was the whole thing was broken. And so I think that Noster is the most hope I've had for anything for a very long time. When I think of Nostr, I think of it in 2,000 years. I don't think about it in 20 days. You know, I don't think about, oh, which influencers can we get to come over? Like, are you kidding me? There won't be influencers where this thing's going. Like, that's not where this is going. We're going 2,000 years from now. We're going 200 years from now. So, you know, I'm thinking about establishing. That's why when I say I needed to come over, I was looking for a place where survivors could speak freely in a censorship-resistant way. It's because Epstein wasn't the only Epstein. You know what I mean? Like, authoritarian governments are kind of the norm if you look throughout history. Like, we gotta be ready for the next Epstein. We gotta be ready for the next authoritarian regime, you know, because it's unfortunately these types of people keep coming.
Yep.
So, and you know, all types of, you know, religious persecution and all things like that. I mean, this is all throughout history. So I am grateful for Nostr. I do thank God for Nostr. I've cried tears of gratitude over Nostr. I swear I have. That probably sounds crazy. I don't care. I haven't gotten that emotional over Bitcoin yet. I think once the Bitcoin thing hit me a little bit, I was like, oh, okay. I understood Bitcoin because I started to be able to understand Nostr. You know, I wasn't a Bitcoiner before I came over to Nostr. So that's interesting. But I haven't cried over Bitcoin yet, but I could probably. I think it probably sounds crazy to people if they think, oh, she's cried tears of joy and gratitude over Nostr. But I think you have to understand the pit of hell that someone has to go to realize how much Nostr is needed. You know, I mean, the Epstein Maxwell case is the perfect case to use as an example, unfortunately. And I say perfect sort of like it's an unfortunately perfect case. You have survivors that went to the FBI. The FBI, multiple survivors are suing the FBI as we speak because the FBI, I'm not saying they actively help Epstein, but also, I'm also not saying that. We'll let the courts decide. We'll let the courts decide. But the survivors went to the law enforcement. Law enforcement treated them like they were crazy. Law enforcement tried to shut them down. Local law enforcement, all the way up to the top, tried to shut them down. Then the survivors went to the corporate press. The corporate press did a puff piece on Epstein. You know, so where does a survivor go when they're in a situation like that? They can go directly to social media. They don't have to go through the gatekeepers of the corporate press. They don't have to go through the gatekeepers of the influencers because the influencers, and I use the word influencer in quotations, are the new corporate press. They don't have to go through those people anymore. They can be their own press. They can be their own voice. They don't need to go through all that. But on a corporate tech provider, they still don't own their own voice. They're still not empowered. X can decide to remove their post if it's whatever, to who knows? It could just be a dev that gets a back, not a dev, but, you know, somebody that can be inside. They could just remove their post, or the entire platform of X could go down and that survivor's voice can never be heard from again. Mm-hmm. You know, all governments can collectively say we're removing X and now that survivor can never be heard from again. So I think about these types of situations and I think about these cases. I think about how much quicker if the survivors of Epstein, the first time that they went to the FBI, were able to control their own voice on a protocol like Nostr, how much more quickly someone like Epstein could have been maybe taken down. I'm not saying, I mean, you can't go back and change the past, but I do think about these things. And Epstein's not the only Epstein, as we know. So that's why I look at something like Nostr, and that's why I cry about Nostr, because I'm like, yes, finally, you know. And it's not just about survivors; it's also about journalists and political dissidents and whistleblowers and, you know, little church groups, you know. So that's why I cry. I probably sound crazy. I'm probably the most woo 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 people, you know, one of the more woo 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 emotional people on Nostr, but that's fine.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you're validating the title of our podcast. I think that's the first time I've heard someone say, "Yes, I actually do thank God for Nostr." And I appreciate you. Like, you know, you keep referring to yourself as a black sheep, and you are, but you're our black sheep. I think you've been incredibly courageous to first of all talk about this stuff in public with all the exposure that you've gotten, and then also courageous to do it on Nostr, to stick with us through all of the shortcomings and maturity and flaws of this, especially because it's not easy. You know, you were saying you're not technical. Like, I don't know how you got on Nostr in the first place, but I'm really impressed by you, and I really appreciate your presence and sticking around. So,
Will made it easy, and it just took me a long time to figure out that my keys were important.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how important they were. Now, to me, they feel like gold. It took me quite a while to realize that Nostr is still growing, that Nostr is still working in real time. That was a change for me. I was just like used to being handed everything on a silver platter on corporate tech. I didn't realize how easy it had been for me. Some of the harassment that I have received was a little bit more, I was like, holy Toledo, this is real. I don't know what to do now because I don't have the shield of being on a corporate tech provider where you have some recourse, a little recourse. So that was unique. But the benefits for me strongly outweigh the negative. And it's been, I've met incredible people. I've gone to a couple events and met people. And, you know, honestly, I am actually really grateful for the community because the community taught me to slow down, taught me how to enjoy social media again because I hated it. I didn't realize how much I hated it until I started liking it. And also educated me about Bitcoin, some health, some other topics that I naturally am kind of into, but didn't really, I think it's been really good. I like the demographic and the type of people that are on Nostr. I wish there was more women on Nostr, but the women that are there are super cool. Like, I like them all, and it's really fun. It has been a lot more challenging for me to get my friends to come over.
Mm-hmm.
They try it, and it's just, like, not their thing. They don't really want to be around Bitcoiners. Say that with love. I say that with love. They don't want to be around Bitcoiners. And I don't have a problem being around Bitcoiners because I think I am more like Bitcoiners than I think I'm like Bitcoiners kind of. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of similarities in the vibe.
Yeah. Well, adoption will happen when it happens. I'm not too worried about it. It's we'll build a protocol, and honestly, it's probably still too soon for mass adoption. We need to get a lot of this stuff sorted out. So no hurry. But I think that's a good place to leave it. Thanks for coming on the podcast and talking about all that stuff. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to seeing what the future holds for you. It's bright.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thanks.